In January of last year, a picture of a female rape protester was suddenly everywhere on the internet. And the picture showed a pretty young woman wearing no shirt, with a very low cut, very tiny skirt, with the words "still not asking for it" written across her bare torso in black marker. She stood with her fist raised like this above her head. A male viewer of this picture commented publicly on the site, but then again, it's kind of like putting a meat suit on and telling a shark not to eat you. The website owner, who's also male, on the site where he posted this, posted a brilliant and pointed reply. I have removed the profanity. "We men are not sharks. We're not rabid animals living off of pure instinct. We're capable of rational thinking and understanding. Just because someone is cooking food doesn't mean that you are entitled to eat it. Just because a banker is counting money doesn't mean that you are being given free money. Just because a person is naked doesn't mean that you are entitled to have sex with them. You are not entitled to someone else's body just because it's exposed. What is so difficult about this concept?" Indeed, what is so very, very difficult about this concept? What is difficult is that we live in a rape culture. And the bulk of this is going to be directed at a female victim with a male perpetrator, because that is far and away the statistic that we see. This is not to say that there are not male victims who suffer in their own way just as incredibly. Culture is such a nice sounding word. It can have connotations of patronage of the arts, or a feel of sophistication, such as I myself am wont to display. If we have culture, or we are cultured, we have risen above those basic levels of civilization. Culture, however, is much more than that. The dictionary says it's also these two things. It's a behavior that depends upon the capacity for learning and transmitting knowledge to succeeding generations. And it's also the customary beliefs, social forms, and material traits of a racial, religious, or social group. The features of everyday existence, way of life shared by people in a place or time. So popular culture, Southern culture. Our behaviors for sharing knowledge with our succeeding generations. Culture is the fire in which we burn. It's the air we breathe. It is all around us to the point that we don't even see it anymore. So why all of a sudden, because we didn't hear this 10 years ago, why now? Why are we hearing that we are a rape culture? Is this a new thing? Has something changed? Are we really, and how do we change it? Rape culture is a concept used to describe a way of life in which rape and sexual violence are common, and in which prevalent attitudes, norms, practices, and media normalize, excuse, tolerate, or even condone rape. Before 1974, I wouldn't have been able to even use that word on this pulpit. We just didn't talk about it. In 74, the term rape culture was used in the first book on the issue, which was Rape, a Sourcebook for Women. It included first-person accounts In that book, the New York radical feminist stated that our ultimate goal is to eliminate rape, and that goal can't be achieved without a revolutionary transformation in our society. Admittedly, things have changed since 74, and not always in ways we can control or understand. We've traditionally talked about rape as an act of power, oppression, domination, and control rather than sex, and this is still very much true. But why now does it hit the news every few weeks? We're barraged with stories of teachers sleeping with middle and high school students. I'd be scared to ask how many people in this room have read 50 Shades of Grey. I know I did. But it's a book about sexually powered dysfunctional relationships, distorted love. It's not even about healthy B&D, S&M, or any other practice. It's distorted. It made the New York Times bestseller list and is considered a romance. They're making a movie out of it. I'm sure it'll be a great date movie. In August of 2012, a drunken, unconscious 16-year-old West Virginia girl was raped at a party by two teenage boys, both football players in the Steubenville, Ohio high school team. The boys not only didn't hide what they were doing, they took pictures, video, and they texted them to friends live. Their arrest absolutely shocked them and their friends. The convictions rocked the town, tore it into fighting factions. CNN coverage mentioned how the boys' lives had been ruined. These promising young athletes. How could we do this to them? Laurie Anderson, author of the book Speak, which tells the story of a fictional teenage rape victim, is afraid that young boys often don't even understand what rape actually is, and some of the young girls are in this category too. On her website, there's a discussion board, which I actually participate in, where real teachers talk about students' reactions to this book. One middle school teacher from California posted at great length about her shock, sickness, and dismay as she realized that the gifted eighth graders that she taught, now these are not dumb children, very bright children, gifted eighth graders couldn't understand why Steubenville was rape. No clue. They knew that if the victim said no, it was rape. That was obvious to them. But no one had said no in Steubenville. She was unconscious. They didn't get it. When she explained to them that rape wasn't just forced sexual contact after no, rape was sexual contact that happened when somebody didn't say yes, the young people in her class were horrified. Two of the boys approached her after the class to ask about specific events that they themselves had participated in, which in both cases were rape. They were not even aware that what they had done was illegal, immoral, unethical. By creating a fiction of stranger danger or the rapist as some faceless dark shadow taking out his anger on a random victim, the U.S. has otherized and monsterized rapists in a way that is not true. Now, I'm not saying they don't exist. Absolutely. There are people out there with deep mental illness, rage issues. It happens. But one in four women and one in six men will experience sexual assault. So I want you to think about those numbers for a minute. Look at the size group we have in this room, and you think about what those numbers mean. Most of their attackers will have been someone they knew. And in some cases, the rapist will not even realize that what he did was rape.
This is rape culture.
Professor Steven Landsberg is an economic instructor at the University of Rochester. He was Professor of the Year a few years ago. And in March of last year, his public blog, his public presence, said this: "Let's suppose that you or I or someone we love or someone we care about from afar is raped while unconscious in such a way that it causes no direct physical harm, no injury, no pregnancy, no disease. Despite the lack of physical damage, we are shocked, appalled, and horrified at the thought of being treated this way and suffer deep trauma as a result. Ought the law discourage such acts of rape? Should they be illegal?" A few paragraphs later, he goes on with his idea. "As long as I'm safely unconscious and therefore shielded from the cost of the assault, why shouldn't the rest of the world, or more specifically my attacker, be allowed to reap the benefits?" This is a man who taught several hundred college students, multiple classes. Two students complained about this blog. Not 30, not 60, not all of them. Two women found this offensive and went to the school. This is rape culture. How can we uphold the worth and dignity of each individual if they are a commodity which exists so that others can reap the benefits? Male or female, it doesn't matter. Where is the compassion and the peace, the respect for connection? Our media commercial culture doesn't help much. Some of you may remember the sexist and often misogynistic commercials of the 50s, which showed things like a woman being spanked by her husband for giving him stale coffee. Anybody remember that one? I know I do. Still in magazines when I grew up. Another wife was in awe of a ketchup bottle, which, and I quote, "even a woman can open." Today we have modern day portrayals of men as endearingly stupid, lazy, animalistic, aggressive. I bet quite a few of you have seen the yogurt commercial in which a bumbling and almost idiotic husband overhears his wife talking about her diet, including apple turnover, Boston cream pie, chocolate, strawberry. We watch as he sneaks behind her back into the refrigerator for all the good things that she has kept him from gorging on, blindly ignoring the Yoplait yogurt containers that she's actually referring to. Because we all know men are too stupid to be allowed access to the food. Pizza and cleaning supply commercials. Husbands and their friends nearly destroy a room. How many have we seen of these? They're surprised when their wife or girlfriend is upset. Tostitos spots, where businessmen stuff snacks in their faces while the female member of the team works and then high-five one another as she finishes the project, yelling, "Go team," while she rolls her eyes. What about Lynx and Axe body spray? They are geared toward people unable to function independently. And recent fast food commercials have included men ramming one another at the drive-thru window because they cannot wait for food. Men unable to share. Men taking one another and their girlfriends' food and drinks because they can't control themselves. No one bases their life off commercials, and I'm not saying that, but they reflect what amuses us, what charms us, what calls to us. They're insidious. They're a mirror, and that reflection is ugly. The web itself furthers the problem. Social networks make lives open books. People are growing up in a world of continuous connection, check-ins, bombardment with information from around the world, and quite a bit of that furthers the devaluation of others, or casting others as a benefit to be reaped as we watch for fun. Just while researching this sermon, I found literally, and I do mean this very literally, hundreds of thousands of websites dedicated to pranks, tricks, fails. Something typically done by younger men and women and filmed for immediate net posting. You want to know some of the funny tricks I saw? Feeding someone a ghost chili on their pizza without warning them, and then laughing hysterically while they scream in pain and throw up. I saw this one not once or twice, but a couple of hundred times. Pranks like flipping over somebody's bed to wake them up, launching them face first into a wall. Pranks like covering a passed out young man's face with black permanent marker drawings of penises and obscenities at a party celebrating his wedding the next day. Pranks like locking a steel bike lock around a young man's neck while he slept, knowing he had to get up for his first professional job in the morning. They left it on him and went. These are not done to enemies. These are what you do to your friends. Friends who the college professor I mentioned might say are there for us to reap the benefits. Rape culture, a culture where others, men and women, are there to provide us with something. They somehow owe us amusement, sex, validation, entertainment. Among those under 30, women seem to suffer most from the sexual expectations, while young men are beaten, battered, and demeaned by vicious assaults masquerading as tricks. So as you use, what do we do? How do we dismantle a culture where others exist for enjoyment, regardless of the damage? Because that's what underlays all this. When people are no longer people, when they are something for us to get a benefit from. We start at the grassroots, doing what we do best. We talk and we teach, we live our values, we call for transformation. But it begins with talking. Talk to your friends, to your children, to your grandchildren. When you talk about things like Steubenville, make sure people understand what rape is. It isn't just that she did she say no. It's that she didn't say yes, or he didn't say yes. Ask if they agree with this. Ask how they feel about it. Why do they think that's funny on a fail site? Talk about using others for personal gratification or entertainment. Explain why any act at all that uses another person's body in ways they do not enjoy for someone else's entertainment is wrong. Talk to your kids and grandkids about bullying and pranking. Find out what they think is funny and what they find dismaying. Get out and see what's out there. Find out why your friends laugh at what they laugh at. When products or services are sold to you using objectionable commercials that violate your beliefs about humanity, you don't have to boycott the product. We probably wouldn't have anything to eat or drink. But take 5 minutes, send an email to the company. Let them know that you're buying in spite of the commercial, not because of it, that you didn't find it funny. And talk to others about why you feel the way you do. We can't dismantle our culture by doing what we are doing. We're trying to teach women how not to be raped, and it doesn't work. This supposes that rapists are all strangers in dark alleys, and it says that women are responsible for preventing rape. During Occupy Wall Street, several sexual assaults of protesters occurred, and in response, Occupy Wall Street built a 16-square-foot safe house. It was a good thing. But getting men not to rape women is a better starting point. Can you imagine heterosexual men having to set up a safe space so that they can protest without being attacked by LGBTQ folk and women? We all grin because it sounds so ridiculous. Can you see a bunch of 30 strapping grown men in a 16 square foot safe space? Really? Women need safe spaces because we live in a culture that makes sexual occupancy permissible anywhere. Occupy rape culture while occupying Wall Street. That's what they started to say, because doing otherwise is like throwing women to the lions and trying to teach them not to be eaten. My favorite and maybe the most gentle reminder of how this all works came from a Michigan mother named Magda, who demonstrated how to talk to very young men in an open letter she wrote to her sons, who were 8 and 11. And the end of the letter ends like this. This letter is almost over, but the next part is super important. Not everyone you know has been taught all the stuff we talk about. You're going to know people, maybe even be friends with people, who think it's okay to hurt other people in a lot of ways. One of those ways is sex. I know you're going to hear other boys say things about girls, or sometimes other boys, that means they don't care about those people's feelings or bodies. And when you hear that, I need you to step in. All you have to do is say something like, "Dude, that's not cool." Or something that lets the person know that they've said something nasty and it's not okay. Remember that everyone wants to fit in. If you can take control of the mood in the room by letting them know it isn't okay, they'll stop so they don't look like an idiot. Remember how we talk all the time about how we're the people who help, who fix things when there's a problem or someone's in trouble? You may get a chance to do that someday, because those boys who say nasty things about girls or other boys may actually do something to them. And if you're ever anywhere where boys start hurting someone or touching them in any way they don't want, you need to step in. If he or she's asleep or drunk or passed out or drugged and can't say no, you need to step in. Remember, it's not good unless both people can say they want it. And if the person isn't saying anything, that doesn't mean yes. If they aren't saying specifically yes, then it's wrong. She continues to tell them how to safely step forward, even if they hate the girl or boy being attacked. Even if the child's been mean to them, that they can stand up for them and still hate them again tomorrow. We can destroy rape culture. We can talk with the younger generation. We can talk with our own. We can make it not okay to think this is funny or sexy. We can create a culture where treating people as things isn't acceptable, and where we talk about these things. We can make it clear that men are not bumbling, mindless animals, and women are not meat suits to be thrown to the sharks. Live your values. Share them as you journey. Refuse to join in a culture where doing otherwise is accepted. When enough of us stand together in fighting for dignity and worth for everyone, we become the majority and we change the world. Amen.